is DJ Boom with Radio Autonomía. We're speaking with Kirby, a member of the Best Practices Policy Project, a group of people who fight for the human rights of people in the sex trades. Hi, Kirby. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, DJ Boom.
Now, you and the Best Practices Policy Project were just in Geneva, Switzerland a few days ago, speaking before the UN Human Rights Committee during the committee's review of the U.S.'s compliance with the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights. Can you tell us about the Best Practices Policy Project and the ways in which your group participated in the UN review of the U.S.?
Sure. The Best Practices Policy Project is a national network, and we're dedicated to supporting organizations and advocates working with sex workers, people in the sex trade, and related communities throughout the U.S. And we participated in the review in a number of ways. I went representing Best Practices, and a member of Sex Worker Outreach Project, Phoenix, also went. And we submitted a joint report prior to the review, documenting the ways that the U.S. policy, specifically focusing on Arizona and Phoenix, but using that as an example of policies that are enacted throughout the U.S., the way that this violates the U.S.'s obligations under the covenant, so the way that this violates people's civil and human rights. And we submitted that report, and then we went and we lobbied the committee members while we were there. And we also met with the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders, which is another UN mechanism, and to talk specifically about the case of Monica Jones and the way that she's been targeted because of her activism. And we also had a chance to do some advocacy with the U.S. government specifically.
That sounds great. I wanted to also ask you a little bit about how maybe the U.S. answered the question, the question of its compliance with civil and political rights.
That's a great question. One specific question that one of the Human Rights Committee members raised, and this is the Human Rights Committee is the body that of independent human rights experts that reviews every government that's a party to the treaty, reviews their compliance with the treaty. And the question they asked was basically, they were questioning the U.S. on this policy of criminalizing sex work in order to address trafficking. They were basically saying that this is a problematic way of addressing it, and it doesn't seem to be effective, not to mention it could be, for people that have been sexually trafficked, it would be kind of a double victimization. And that's actually incredibly important, that they really see through this reason that the U.S. throws up constantly when they're questioned about the use of anti-prostitution laws to address trafficking, that they know that this isn't effective. One thing that the U.S. says is, well, we need this in order to, we need to criminalize sex workers across the board in order to go after trafficking. And if you look at, for example, the Department of Justice's model state criminal code that it says it promulgated in order to meet its obligations under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, it includes the criminalization of sex work and calls for jail time for sex workers. And this is supposedly to help them secure prosecutions of traffickers. But in the end, what this really does, it has nothing to do with, addressing trafficking. It criminalizes a whole array of people. There's no other area of trafficking where you see that reasoning. So the U.S. will never say, well, in order to help people who have been trafficked into other forms of labor, such as domestic labor, farm labor, factory work, we're going to criminalize the people who are doing that work. There's just no logic to it. And so it really kind of, the fact that the UN, this human rights expert, can see through that really pulls the wind out of the sails of the many people who seem to think that criminalizing sex work is going to address trafficking. Like, for example, Project Rose in Arizona, which we wrote about in our report. I mean, Project Rose is nothing more than a mass police sweep using discriminatory profiling by the police combined with laws that are very vague and overbroad that allow them to go after anyone that the police kind of imagine to be a sex worker. And they do these mass sweeps and bring people into the Project Rose Center, where they then deny certain of their civil rights, namely their rights to due process, because they don't allow them to see a lawyer, and yet they are questioning them without providing the right kind of warnings against self-incrimination. And so that is what Project Rose is. It's this criminal law enforcement effort, but they frame it as an anti-trafficking initiative. And anyone that, you know, has witnessed the people coming out of Project Rose or talked with people that have had, you know, arrests as a result of Project Rose would tell you that this had nothing to do for them with addressing trafficking. It was just simply about them being criminalized.
I want to ask you a question about the arrests. What are, like, the material consequences when someone is profiled, you know, as a sex worker? Like, for example, you were talking about Monica Jones. What happened to Monica Jones, or what might happen to other people, you know, sweeped up or arrested during a Project Rose raid?
Well, Arizona has some very draconian laws around sex work. So like a few other states, it actually has penalties for sex work that require mandatory minimum jail time, including for the first offense, escalating to felony. And so if you're charged with any kind of crime, there's and convicted, there's ramifications in terms of discrimination in employment or other sectors. And if you're charged with a felony, there's additional social barriers that are set up, including the right to vote and the right to access certain forms of assistance. And so, when Monica was arrested, she's facing charges under a specific statute in Arizona called, where the wording is manifesting the intent to commit prostitution, and basically the punishment if she's found guilty could be, you know, jail time. If she's had enough arrests in the past, she could be charged as a felon. And the thing that is astounding about the statute is that this isn't, if you listen to the wording of it, manifesting intent to commit, it's not an attempt crime. It's not that, like, police see someone attempting to do something. It's this other weird whole sort of thought, almost like a thought crime area, where they're essentially saying you manifested the intent to commit a crime. And the way that they're allowed to draw that conclusion is incredibly broad. What's written in the statute is that are things like waving at cars, talking to passersby, any bodily gesture, making any bodily gesture, and that's literally language that's in the statute. And so this just opens the door very broadly for police that we already know have a habit of profiling people as sex workers and using this statute to make arrests arbitrarily.
If somebody were to make it, you know, after being arrested and they were put in prison and were, you know, undocumented or trans, what are the consequences of being part of those particular marginalized communities if put in prison?
Well,
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, for, you know, this is a case for Monica Jones. She's a transgender woman of color, and she will not be placed in the women's prison. She'll be placed in the men's prison. And we know that there is a, you know, documented heightened violence that transgender people face in prison at the hands of correctional staff, guards, and other prisoners. And so that's a major consequence. And sometimes they'll put them, in order to address the violence, they'll also just put people in sort of isolation, which is really another human rights violation. And then so there are immigration consequences of arrest, and specifically sex work is seen as a crime of moral turpitude, and that has specific ramifications in terms of people's risk for deportation. And so these are all the problems that flow from a criminalization approach to sex work under the guise of quote-unquote fighting trafficking. And, you know, that's why I don't think that these folks that are getting funding and support to supposedly address trafficking have any real concern for the lives of the people that are getting swept up and really dramatically impacted by their policies.
I want to return to your group speaking before the UN Human Rights for a moment. And I read on your website that your group was using the human rights reporting mechanisms as a strategy to build international pressure and gain support for people in the sex trade. Has this strategy worked so far? And if so, who are some of the allies that you have gained along the way?
Sure. Well, these mechanisms are only as good, the results from them are only as good as the organizing on the ground is. They're only as going to have the impact if people use them, activists use them. Because we have actually done advocacy before the United Nations Human Rights Council, which is a different UN human rights body. And there was a question that the U.S. Adopted and is supposed to be acting on regarding the protection of sex workers from discrimination. And there was a massive organizing campaign that came out of that that included people from a variety of different types of groups, LGBT rights activists, sex worker rights activists, health advocates. And so that kind of organizing is important, and people push the issue with the State Department, and they, you know, continue to do that. The covenant, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the U.S. is obligated to abide by the articles within that covenant because it ratified it, but it did it with a reservation to it being sort of quote-unquote self-executing, so in order to try and limit people's ability to enforce it in court in the U.S. So there's sort of a problem with enforcement, but it's still very relevant that a human rights expert internationally would, in this last review, question the U.S. about their approach. They're using criminalization as an approach to address trafficking, using the criminalization of sex workers in particular as a way to fight trafficking. And we need to, as advocates and activists, we have to amplify that and take that to the Justice Department, take that to local law enforcement, take that to campaigns around the country and say, look, this isn't valid internationally. This is not a valid approach and you've got to stop. I mean, one thing we did was we participated while we were in Geneva in a civil society delegation with the U.S. So the U.S. delegation that came for the review was there, and they invited people from that were there to lobby the committee members to speak with them. And we raised this question with the U.S. government, and the response from the Justice Department was along the lines of, you know, well, we need this to go after traffickers. And we approached the Justice Department afterwards, and we said, look, this isn't helping, and in fact, it's harming people. And his first response was to say, well, you know, that when we're holding these charges over people's heads, it's just a small thing. It's not really a big deal. And we said, actually, you know, people are charged with, there's mandatory minimum jail time for these charges, and then they lead to felonies in some cases for people, which has a huge impact on people's lives. And furthermore, we have the case of Marsha Powell, who in 2009 was held on a 27-month sentence for prostitution in Arizona and was killed when the Department of Corrections left her out in a metal cage in the desert with no water. And so this imprisoning of people in these conditions, these prison conditions, has a very dramatic effect on people's lives. And he actually seemed a bit moved by that, and he said that, you know, he wants us to meet with the people in the Justice Department who specifically deal with trafficking. And so, again, this is an area where we're going to need the support of activists across the country in making that into something that is a win for people that want to see an end to the criminalization of these populations.
I agree, and I also think it might be important for people who are, you know, the allies of people in the sex industry and in the sex trade, to understand the difference, right? Because the issues, it sounds like they're being conflated a bit. And I wanted to ask you a question so that our listeners can understand a bit, because this anti-trafficking trend is being informed, or perhaps it's like this chicken and the egg sort of situation, where it's actually, they're feeding each other these real anti-trafficking initiatives and their effects on real people.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been this problematic focus in the U.S. on sort of rescue and criminal system law enforcement approaches to trafficking, rather than looking at, you know, a more holistic approach that would look at making sure that people that are in coercive situations in all forms of trafficking, not just sex trafficking, have access to all of the services that they need, as well as better regulation in certain sectors, for example, in agriculture, to make sure that people actually can effectively report when there's coercion happening, and other kinds of abuses that happen in labor. I mean, we have like a real dearth of resources in that kind of area and that kind of enforcement and regulation and of expansion of criminal approaches that sort of don't look at systemic issues, but instead look at this kind of single focus trafficker as the main problem approach.
You mentioned needing you know, support on the ground from, you know, national and international support. And yet there are so many people and institutions and celebrities and other popular media outlets that are jumping on the bandwagon with this sex trafficking panic. We just saw that during the Super Bowl this past year. And with upcoming television programs like The Slave Hunter, you know, where the show claims to rescue and free victims of trafficking. How does the popular media related to real anti-trafficking initiatives like Project Rose in Arizona that you're working with?
Well, I think that one thing that would be helpful is if there were an understanding that sex work does not equal necessarily sex trafficking, and that we need to treat everyone with respect for their human rights. And so the kind of criminalization and rescue approach actually that we've been seeing in the mainstream media and seeing enacted in government policies and law enforcement approaches is not only harmful for sex workers and people who are profiled as sex workers, but it can actually be harmful for people who are trafficked. or who have some form of, you know, coercion that they're facing, and in terms of, you know, forced cooperation with prosecution and not insufficient resources to meet their needs and their immigration needs. And so I think that we have to shift the discussion and start talking about systemic issues, people's need for services and resources to address poverty, the problems with the U.S.'s draconian immigration system, and many other kind of systemic issues that were sort of, I think, leaving behind in this criminalization approach to trafficking.
Okay, and then I just have one more question I wanted to ask you. If there's anything that our listeners, you know, anywhere in the world, or just here in the U.S. or in the Americas, how they can, you know, show support for your campaigns, whether it be for, you know, the Monica Jones campaign or to support sex workers in general. Perhaps some of the listeners are involved within the sex trade. What are some resources that you can share with us? And then how, you know, how can people get in touch with you to support your campaigns?
Sure. Well, in Arizona, and specifically in Phoenix, I'd really recommend that people look into the Sex Workers Outreach Project and find out. They have a Facebook page, and just find out ways that they can support or get involved. I think that there's all kinds of talents that are needed for this movement, including, you know, the ability to do advocacy, to make the artwork, the ability to show up to a demonstration, or the ability to just say something online that is in support of human rights for sex workers and people that are profiled as sex workers. And then for Best Practices Policy Project, our website is www.bestpracticespolicy.org. And people can find out, can contact us and find out more about ways that they can support there. And I think just really paying attention where you live to laws that sort of single out sex workers and people profiled that way for particular abuse, police abuse and criminalization, and thinking about ways to get active and organized to take those down and to support human rights for sex workers would be another way to get involved.
Okay, I think we're probably done, unless there's something else, Kirby, that you feel like you want to throw in. I mean, you have time to think, right? So,
well, you know, one thing I wanted to suggest to people in terms of activism is this use of the mechanism of the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights Defenders. I know that there are a lot of people within the immigrant rights movement, within the anti-war movement, that are targeted by law enforcement or by, you know, border agents because of their activism. And there is a way to get at least some, you know, international pressure on the U.S. government when that happens to activists, and that's that the special rapporteur. And so if people are interested in that, they can write to us, and we can get them more information.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for your time and for all this really, really great information. And we'll definitely put up your website. Thank you so much, Kirby.
Great. Thank you so much.